So after services today, we have another Bible journaling lesson. Since December, we've been going through the account of Elisha, and today is going to be our final lesson on Elisha. So today, I wanted to share with you everything that we've been going through, just to give you a taste of what sorts of topics that we cover in Bible journaling. If you're interested, feel free to join us upstairs. And it's also a review for all the journalers. I haven't decided if there'll be a test yet, so pay close attention. As we go through the message this afternoon, we will learn lessons from five major themes in Elisha's account. And for your reference, these are the themes that we're going to see. Faith and trust in God. Faith demonstrated through works. Zeal for God. Building relationships with God's people. And doing whatever God asks, even the small things. Now, just to level set, obviously Elisha was a prophet. He had a much different mission in life than you and I have. Even so, these themes are something that we can see in our own lives. And if we take a look, self-examination points out maybe there's an area that's we're falling a little short in. Well, that's just an area for us to focus on, to work on, so we can grow. So now, let's get to Elisha. And we're going to start with his background. So we're going to start where he got the job. And if you want to open your Bibles, we're going to go to 1 Kings chapter 19. So just before this, Elijah was hiding in a cave after the prophets of Baal had been executed. Now, Jezebel wasn't happy about this, and she said that she was going to end Elijah's life. Well, Elijah escapes. He was fed by God, and he traveled for 40 days and 40 nights until he arrived at Mount Horeb. Elijah, at this point, felt he was alone in his zeal for God. But then God told Elijah, "Go, anoint Hazael as king of Syria, Jehu as king of Israel, and Elisha as prophet in Elijah's place." And just a quick note here on Elijah versus Elisha. It can be confusing to keep these names straight. I had problems when I was writing this message. Thankfully, Margaret went through it, helped me catch the par areas where I mixed them up. But in case I misspeak, I just ask for your grace and forgiveness. So let's pick things up with the call of Elisha in 1 Kings chapter 19 and verse 19. So he, Elijah, departed from there and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen before him. And he was with the 12th. Then Elijah passed by him and threw his mantle on him. And he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, "Please, let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow you." And he said to him, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" So Elisha turned back from him and took a yoke of oxen and slaughtered them and boiled their flesh using the oxen's equipment and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he arose and followed Elijah and became his servant. So now we're going to start in on that first theme, Elisha's faith and trust in God. Because there's a few things to note here just in these three verses. First off, Elisha was not surprised that some guy just walked up down the road and threw a cloak over his shoulders. We have to remember that Elijah was a well-known person in the land from all he had done in God's name as well as his appearance. You can keep a finger here, and if you want, turn over to 2 Kings chapter 1, and we'll look at verses 7 and 8. I can read it for you. 2 Kings chapter 1 and verse 7. Then he said to them, "What kind of man was it who came up to meet you and told you these words?" So they answered him, "A hairy man wearing a leather belt around his waist." And he said, "It is Elijah the Tishbite." So Elijah was recognized just by the clothes that he wore. So then, of course, Elisha probably recognized who it was that came up and threw the cloak over his shoulders. The second thing to note here in this part of the story is there was no questioning on Elisha's part. He had been working in the field. He obviously was a wealthy man because he had 12 yoke of oxen. But despite his wealth, he realizes he's being called to something more important. He's being called to be a prophet of God. And at this calling, Elisha offers a sacrifice. leaves everything behind and follows God and Elijah. So from the very start, we see that Elisha had a strong belief and trust in God. Now from that point forward, Elisha learned much from Elijah. Now let's jump forward in the account to where Elisha truly steps into the office of prophet. And we're going to go into 2 Kings chapter 2. We'll read verses 6 through 11. So again, this is 2 Kings chapter 2, starting in verse 6. Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, please, for the Lord has sent me on to the Jordan." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as your soul lives, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. And 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood facing them at a distance, while the two of them stood by the Jordan. Now Elijah took his mantle, rolled it up, and struck the water, and it was divided this way and that. So the two of them crossed over on dry ground. And so it was, when they had crossed over, that Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask, what may I do for you before I am taken from you?" Elisha said, "Please let a double portion of your spirit be upon me." So he said, "You have asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I am taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if not, it shall not be so." And then it happened, as they continued on and talked, that suddenly a chariot of fire appeared with horses of fire and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. So we see here, Elisha met the requirement that was set. He saw Elijah departing. When that happened, did he sit around lamenting the loss of his mentor? Well, no. We see in the following verses, he takes up Elijah's mantle, which of course was the outward sign of the office of the prophet. He strikes the waters of the Jordan and crosses over on dry land. The other prophets who were watching saw this and recognized that Elisha had now stepped into that role as God's prophet. And now, just as a point to clarify, from this point forward, we're only going to be talking about Elisha. So if you hear me say Elijah, that's a mistake. And it's Elijah from this point forward. So now let's get on to theme number two, his outward demonstrations of faith. And we see this right in the next account that we ever recorded in 2 Kings 2 and verses 19 through 22. So if you just drop down in your Bibles a little bit, we'll pick up it up in verse 19. Then the men of the city said to Elisha, "Please notice, the situation of this city is pleasant, as my lord sees, but the water is bad and the ground barren." And he said, "Bring me a new bowl and put salt in it." So they brought it to him. Then he went out to the source of the water and cast the salt in there and said, "Thus says the Lord, I have healed this water. From it there shall be no more death or barrenness." So the water remains healed to this day, according to the word of Elisha, which he spoke. As we saw, Elisha had a strong belief and trust in God. But those in the city who came to him, Elisha realized that they may not have that strong of faith, and they needed an outward sign. Because Elisha, he could have prayed to God to heal the waters and had that happen. These people, again, must have needed that outward sign. Elisha was showing his faith through his works. He asked for a new bowl, so there could be no question that there was anything that was in the bowl that could have caused this. And he also used a small amount of salt. Now, salt obviously is a symbol of purification. But with the spring that constantly flows, this small bowl full of salt would not have been enough to purify anything. If it was just the salt doing the work, they would have had to put salt in day after day after day. But it wasn't that case. So the salt in the bowl, just outward symbols. Elisha had faith that God would heal these waters. And through his actions, he demonstrated that faith to the people of Jericho. And as he's demonstrating all of his faith, his outward actions, we see come to our third theme, Elisha's zeal for God and God's work. Because immediately after Elisha heals the waters, he travels on. There's another place he needed to be. And as he travels, some youngsters decide to have some fun at his expense. We'll see this in the next two verses, 2 Kings chapter 2 and verse 23 and 24. Then he went up from there to Bethel, and as he was going up the road, some youths came up from the city and mocked him and said to him, "Go up, you bald head! Go up, you bald head!" So he turned around and looked at them and pronounced a curse on them in the name of the Lord. And two female bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 of the youths. Now, I was not able to find how old Elisha was at this point. That's besides the point. When we meet someone, we should be treating them with respect. We shouldn't just start hurling insults at their appearance. But still, God's law does tell us that older people were to hold a place of special reverence. So if they thought he was old, they were not acting properly. And additionally, a person who was God's prophet, they had an additional level of respect that was accorded to them. These children, they had no respect, either for Elisha's perceived age or for his office. And Elisha's reaction to what those kids were doing shows to me that he had a zeal for God. He didn't argue with the kids. He didn't try to reason with them. He didn't try to round them up to go take them to their parents to let the parents know what the kids were doing. He was going about God's work, and he was not going to be delayed. So he did a simple thing. He cursed them in the name of the Lord. Now, he didn't know necessarily what the impacts of that curse would be. He left it to God's hands. He left vengeance to God. But of course, Elisha proclaims this curse, and it does have an immediate effect. This can feel a little bit gruesome, but I feel it does demonstrate that, again, Elisha trusted in God, as well as he had this strong zeal to continue on in God's work, to not let anything delay him. He wasn't about to be distracted from what God had sent him to do. Of course, that required him to travel around the area and brought him into contact with a great number of people. And that brings us to our fourth theme from this account of Elisha, building relationships with God's people. Now, when we read through the accounts of God's prophets, it can be easy to envision them. At least this is how I've envisioned them, as someone who kind of, they drop in out of nowhere, they issue some instructions, correct some people, set some things straight, and they go off to do the next thing. But we need to realize that these prophets, they were people just like you and I. They may have been moving around a lot, but they were also spending time with the people that they came into contact with. Yes, they were in contact with other prophets. They were sent to the rulers of the lands. But they were also in contact with just normal, everyday people. And the first record that we have of Elijah doing this is found in 2 Kings chapter 4. So if you'd head there next, we'll read verses 1 through 4. So again, this is 2 Kings chapter 4, starting in verse 1. A certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, saying, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor is coming to take my two sons to be his slaves." So Elisha said to her, "Well, what shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house but a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go, borrow vessels from everywhere, from all your neighbors, empty vessels. Do not gather just a few. And when you have come in, you shall shut the door behind you and your sons. Then pour it into all those vessels and set aside the full ones." Now, if this happened to you or I, a widow coming up to you saying, "Hey, look, I got some problems. The bill collectors are coming." We might be thinking, "Okay, what extra money do I have that I can help out here?" But Elisha, he helped out financially, but not in a way that I don't think any of us would expect. And the instructions he gave to the woman, they might have sounded a little bit odd, like, "What are you going to do with a bunch of empty jars?" Still, when he gave that instruction, the woman listened, and she acted on it immediately. We could attribute this to Elisha's reputation and the things that he had already done in God's name. But reading between the lines, I see that there was a relationship here. The widow felt comfortable going to Elisha with her problems. And she trusted him enough to do whatever it was that he said to do. And that trust in their relationship led to something miraculous. So let's continue on. Verse 5. So she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured it out. Now it came to pass when the vessels were full that she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not another vessel." And so the oil ceased. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons live on the rest." Now this was a powerful example of God saving his people, looking out for the widow, looking out for the fatherless, brought about through the relationship that God's prophet had with this woman. Now after this, Elisha heads off to another town, Shunem, and another friendship. So let's see that in the next three verses. 2 Kings chapter 4, starting in verse 8. Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, and she persuaded him to come eat some food. And so it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, "Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please, let us make a small upper room on the wall, and let us put a bed in for him there, and a table and a chair and a lampstand. So it will be, whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there." Obviously, Elisha had gotten to be well known in the area. He'd been sharing meals in the home of this woman and her husband, and they must have gotten to know each other very well. I mean, you're not going to put an addition onto your house for some stranger who just happened to stop by, right? Or look at it from Elisha's point of view. You're not going to set up in the house of someone that you barely know. You want to be sure what situation you're getting into. So this was a relationship that Elisha had built over time. In return for the kindness that the woman had shown to Elisha, he tells her that she would have a son in a year's time. Now we jump forward a little in the story. The boy is born, he's grown, and he's out in the fields with his father. He complains of a headache. He ends up passing away, and his mother places him on the bed in Elisha's room. Now what's curious at this point in the story is what her reaction is to the death of her only son. Let's see this in verse 21. "And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, shut the door upon him, and went out. Then she called to her husband and said, 'Please send me one of the young men and one of the donkeys, that I may run to the man of God and come back.' So he said, 'Why are you going to him today? It is neither the new moon nor the Sabbath.' And she said, 'It is well.'" Now, undoubtedly, the woman was sad. But her first reaction was to go and find her friend. She had faith in the God of Elisha. She had faith that he could help. Let's continue on in verse 25. "And so she departed and went to the man of God at Mount Carmel. So it was, when the man of God saw her afar off, that he said to his servant Gehazi, 'Look, the Shunammite woman. Please run now to meet her and say to her, "Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?" And she answered, "It is well." Now when she came to the man of God at the hill, she caught him by the feet, but Gehazi came near to push her away. But the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is in deep distress, and the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me." Now, first, I found it odd that the woman said everything was okay. She's just lost her only son, yet she's saying, "No, everything's good." We might think that she was lying. But as I thought about this more, I realized she wasn't lying. She trusted in God. She trusted Elisha. She had faith that God could restore her son to her. And undoubtedly, she had learned this faith from Elisha's example because of their close relationship. Now, even though God had not told Elisha what the problem was, he knew his friend was troubled. It was out of character for her to seek him out, as her husband had pointed out. But Elisha quickly discerns what's going on. And as a result, Elisha sends Gehazi along with his staff. And as we read on in the account, we see that the power of God was not within the staff. He did not awaken when the staff was put on him. Now, we don't know why the staff was sent. Some commentaries seem to indicate that it was trying to teach a lesson to the woman, or it could have been to that God told Elisha to do this, or perhaps it was to instruct Gehazi. There's no clear answer here, so we'll just have to leave this as a question to be answered in the kingdom. Well, let's pick up the account when Elisha arrives at the home in verse 32, and we do see something different happening. So 2 Kings 4 and verse 32. When Elisha came into the house, there was the child lying dead on his bed. He went in, therefore, shut the door behind the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. Now we see here the very first thing that Elisha does. He goes to God in prayer. He went to God because he knew that if anything was going to happen, it was only going to be through God's power. He went up and lay on the child and put his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, and his hands on his hands. And he stretched himself out on the child, and the flesh of the child became warm. Now, this part of the account is also interesting, because as we know from Old Testament law, touching a dead body would make somebody ceremonially unclean. Elisha was very clearly a man of God. He would have known God's law. But the prophets, as Elijah did here, it sometimes would ignore these rules. And Elisha, of course, he ignored the rule here. Whether he was directed to do so by God or he was just so moved by a shared grief with his friend, we don't know. But we do know how it turned out from his actions, continuing on in verse 35. He returned and walked back and forth in the house and again went up and stretched himself out on him. And then the child sneezed 7 times and the child opened his eyes. And he called Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite woman." So he called her. And when she came in to him, he said, "Pick up your son." So she went in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. And then she picked up her son and went out. The son had been restored to life. But after this miracle, did Elisha stick around? No, he headed back to Gilgal, which is going to bring us back to a repeat of our second theme, those outward demonstrations of faith. Because Elisha went from a very close personal relationship that was struggling with the difficulty to an entire area that was facing difficulties. There was a famine in the land. Despite that, the men gathered together to learn from Elisha. So let's see this starting in verse 38. And Elisha returned to Gilgal, and there was a famine in the land. Now the sons of the prophets were sitting before him, and he said to his servant, "Put on the large pot and boil stew for the sons of the prophets." So one went out into the field to gather herbs and found a wild vine, and gathered from it a lapful of wild gourds, and came and sliced them into the pot of stew, though he did not know what they were. Then they served it to the men to eat. Now it happened as they were eating the stew that they cried out and said, "Man of God, there is death in the pot." And they could not eat it. So he said, "Then bring some flour." And he put it in the pot and said, "Serve it to the people that they may eat." And there was nothing harmful in the pot. Now again, just as with the salt in the spring of water, putting the flour into the stew had no power in and of itself. It was an outward sign that Elisha was providing to the sons of the prophets. Elisha had faith that God would cleanse the stew, and the flour was, again, just a symbol. Despite that, I'm sure those first bites of stew, for anyone other than Elisha, might have been a little uncertain. But as verse 41 tells us, everything was fine. Now we'll get into our fifth and final theme, doing whatever God asks, even the small things. So after all these things that Elisha's been doing, his reputation spread throughout the land. Even the king of Israel knew the things that Elisha was able to do. So when the king of Syria wrote to Israel's king about a health army that his army commander, or a health issue that his army commander had, Israel's king knew that that commander, Naaman, needed to go see the prophet. So let's pick that up. If you turn over to chapter 5 of 2 Kings, we'll start in verse 8. So 2 Kings chapter 5, starting in verse 8. So it was when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Please, let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." Then Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean." Now put yourself in Naaman's shoes at this point. If you're the commander of the local military power, and you go to see someone, you're expecting them to come out and talk to you. He's at Elisha's door. Elisha doesn't come out. He sends a messenger out to talk to him. This did not go over very well. See this in verse 11. But Naaman became furious and went away and said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy." So he expected some big outward sign, something impressive, maybe something coming down from the heavens. We don't know what was in his mind, but he wanted big action. That's not what he was told to do. And he continues on. "Are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. Then the voice of reason comes in. And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Sometimes in the midst of a trial, we might feel a little bit like Naaman. We're facing a problem. We go to God and we're expecting there to be some giant task that we need to undertake, some arduous process that we have to go through. And then we realize, through God's inspiration, well, no, the answer is really quite simple. It's just a small thing that we need to do. So at that point, we have a choice to make. Are we going to dismiss this idea? Well, no, that can't be it. It's entirely too easy. Or are we going to take God's instruction and do the small thing? What will we do? Now, today, we reviewed 5 major themes that can be found in what was recorded for us about Elisha's life. Those themes were these: faith and trust in God, outward demonstrations of that faith through works, a zeal for God, building relationships with God's people, and finally, doing whatever God asks, even the small things. Now, these are all good things for us to bear in mind at all times of the year, but especially now as we're approaching Passover and we're taking a close look at our lives. Now, we may not be called to be prophets, but we can still act as Elisha did in whatever way that we're able. His story, which continues on through 2 Kings chapter 13, contains powerful lessons that we can learn from even today. We should strive to look for and find these 5 themes in our lives. Could be that we maybe even take one of them as a special focus area for the coming year. Now, whatever your approach to this is, I hope and pray that we can go through all of our days with that faith, with that trust, with that zeal that Elisha demonstrated.